Tabletops will start after the following messages.
What if music was magic? Against the Gloom is a fantasy TTRPG about punk pirate troubadours fighting back against a bleak world, one gig at a time. From Scripted Games, the studio that brought you Psychic Trash Detectives, comes a new game by Dustin Patrick Winter. Against the Gloom is about harnessing the power of music, finding chosen family, and building community in the face of the void. Find it now on Kickstarter. Rock on.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of Tabletopped. I am your host, Nick, and today we have our returning friend of the pod, Matt Capelli from Roleplay Chat. Matt, how are you doing?
I'm good. It feels good to be back. How's everybody doing? The tabletoppers? Is that what you call your...
Well, the jury is still out.
The jury's still out.
Yeah, there's a whole Discord thread for a little while where we were discussing it, and people had a pretty visceral reaction to tabletoppers.
Okay. Well, then maybe I'll... I didn't say it.
So I think that everyone can kind of self-identify as their friend of the pod status. I'm not putting a title out there to be shot down. But yeah, it's been great to see you. Season 4 of Roleplay Chat just kind of wrapped up before the holiday. Season 5 is starting up in March, so felt like a good time to have you back on, get you back into the interview mode.
And yeah, I appreciate it.
When we were talking offline, we were like, well, what do we want to talk about? And you were like, what about cliffhangers? Been thinking a lot about those. And I love, like, last time we talked about the structure of sort of episodic games. And I feel like both of these topics kind of go hand in hand, because the best way to set somebody up for the next episode of a game is with a cliffhanger.
Yes, very true. And it seems to be like that is a very TV kind of way to, you know, structure the pacing of a game.
Yeah.
When you look at a TV show, especially episodic ones, there's going to be a cliffhanger at the end of almost every episode. I feel like that's like the cycle of how a lot of these shows will be kind of planned out.
Totally. I mean, even within an episode, you have like going to commercial break back when commercials were a thing. And then you have that cliffhanger to get people to come back after the ads to watch the rest of the episode. So I want to jump and dive in on this. What specifically, like, so you and I talked last time and you say you do run primarily episodic games, and so I wanted to kind of get a sense of like how do you use cliffhangers? Do you use them at all? Do you like, how do you kind of write them into a session, you know what I mean?
Yeah Well, so let me give a little more. I guess things might have changed since the last time we spoke. My current challenge for myself these days is to try to run games with as little prep as I can. Yeah. I'm really trying to get that improv muscle as strong as it can be, part because of circumstance.
Yeah.
Because time is precious. And also just for fun, you know, to try something new, try something different. And so while before I was running a lot of episodic games out of like intention and, you know, structure.
Yeah.
Now there's still like vignette style adventures, but I think because I don't have the opportunity to prepare my pacing quite as well, sometimes an episode will be like two or three or four sessions long. Now to get back to your question about these cliffhangers, what I've been trying to do, and I know people listening might cringe. I know X and Threads got mad at me a couple of times already. I try my best to end every game on some kind of a cliffhanger. Now it's not going to be it's not going to be these like enormous moments of like character betrayal that, you know, these extremely cinematic quote unquote cliffhangers. But I do like leaving every game dangling something in front of my players to make them want to come back.
Yeah.
So that's kind of why I wanted to talk about cliffhangers with you today, Nick, because I think when we hear the word cliffhanger, the gut reaction is to think of this like huge background, like moment where the bad guy reveals that really they were an angel all along. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like this whole crazy moment. And that is a cliffhanger. Don't get me wrong. But yeah. I think there's other nuance to be had for sure.
Yeah. Just hearing you talk, I think that also to clarify terms a little bit, cliffhangers are interesting because people usually think of cliffhangers happening at the end of a moment, like an end, like they happen before the end of a story that is like at the chunk of a story. Inherently, they kind of bring up the idea of like a unsatisfying sort of like a anticipatory hook for the next thing that everyone is going to sit down and play. But what I kind of like for cliffhangers and like the way that I sort of tend to use them, to your point of using them at every session kind of thing, is that when I use them as sort of a almost like a teaser for what is to come, rather than, like you said, oh my God, like the ground cracks open and you see this like monster coming out of it and we'll see you next time. we don't do that, but not always anyway. The main thing I like to do is sort of like sometimes I take it even away from the characters and I just give them a glimpse into something that is happening like elsewhere in the world so that players can kind of get excited for the next thing that, and they can start kind of thinking about like, oh, what does that mean? What does that like mean for me as a character? Like, is there's going to be something happening regarding this or whatever? So I'm not sure if that is quite the same as a cliffhanger that you were mentioning, but like I use those all the time as a sort of anticipatory, like excitement builder.
Yeah, exactly. And I, you know, while you were talking, I went and looked it up. So according to the Collins Dictionary, and God, this sounds terrible me saying that, but it's a situation or part of play or movie or whatever, a game that because you are left for a long time not knowing what will happen next creates excitement or fright. Mm. Now we can, you know, extrapolate a better definition, I'm sure. But I don't think that's super interesting for us to sit all day defining what it means. But it's this moment where people don't know what's going on. And they have to wait to find out, I think is how I use them, if that makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, no, totally. I think that going back to everyone getting mad at you, I think that probably what they're doing then is kind of assuming the fright part of like this big thing is happening and like, oh my God, that like, how am I going to react to that? And then the session is over and that's just not feasible to do every time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like almost impossible, in fact. but
definitely.
Yeah. But I think that like you were saying when you were reading that out, that there's like different types that you can do to start building anticipation. And I think that it doesn't always even have to be character based. Like you don't have to make the cliffhanger based on any one of your players. Like they don't have to say like, oh my God, like my character's father is going to be in the next episode. Like that doesn't have to happen every time either, because going back to the sustainability thing, it's just not great, but it is good storytelling to get people excited for the next thing. Like one thing that is sort of not a pet peeve, but it's something that I try desperately to avoid. And this is hard when you do more improv-y stuff because you never know when a session's going to end. But I really try to avoid like, okay, you guys go back to the inn and you like settle down. It's the end of the night and we'll pick up there next time. Like that to me is there's nothing wrong with that, but it just feels like it's like missing something. Like you just missed an opportunity to do something interesting with it. Like it could like the same example is like you go to the inn, and you all settle down. Elsewhere in the town, a wolf howls and a gathering group of shadows like enter through the gates or something. Like that is interesting. And they're like, what the fuck does that mean?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think the recipe for a good cliffhanger in the context of a role-playing game is to dole something out to your players that they want to engage with, but you stop them from doing that. So I remember my notes that I took that I have since lost are slowly coming back to me, Nick. And if I'm not mistaken, I think there was like 4 or 5 different ways that we can do this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So hopefully they'll come back to me as we're chatting. But from what I recall, one of them is using descriptors like that. Yeah. So describing out a scenario that you would probably use like before some kind of encounter, mm-hmm. you know, prepare some kind of scenario or invent some kind of scenario. This is kind of the beauty of it. You can invent some kind of scenario where, yeah, they return to the inn, but then when they get there, they hear howling from the cemetery and they look out the window and they see these wolf-like creatures, you know, climbing up over the hill. Yeah. Boom, done. We're ending the game right here.
Yeah.
You kind of see what's going on. The players can kind of anticipate what's happening, but we're not allowing them to engage just yet. We're letting them kind of get excited about it. So yeah, using these kinds of descriptions without even putting anybody in danger. Like, you're not putting characters in danger. You're not putting players in danger. It's just a description of a cool thing. And then you like close the curtain and say, see you next time.
Yeah. To your point there, like, I think that it's interesting that you say like no one is being put into danger. And I think that because that is, if I was to try to guess the 5, it would be, like you said, sort of a descriptor that happens right before the end that tries to build excitement or anticipation or fear or whatever. I think the other one would be like a hanging action. Like, you are going across like a wire bridge and one of the party members falls and snags onto a rope. And as like one of the characters looks back and says like, are you okay? The GM says, you know, what you see, like the first thing you see is the fear on their eyes. The second thing you see is that the rope is starting to break. And that's where the session ends. That sort of thing. Yeah, exactly. Like, you can do that. And then you can also, I think, like to build fear or anticipation that way by putting somebody in harm's way. The third one, I think, is like mechanically, you can kind of get somebody where you could end on something within your system's mechanics. Like, if you're doing 5e, you end on an initiative roll. You end on a, you know, skill check. You end on a NPC's response to a social encounter. You know, something like that that is trying to pull in the mechanics of the game into the structure of the story. Like that, those are the three that I think that I would use the most. But then if I was going to say is like hinting at a big character moment. So that would be like the interpersonal one.
If I'm not mistaken, those fit into the category. Danger was one of them.
I did it. I'm the best.
The mechanics is interesting. I don't think I thought of that one. But I do like it. And then there was one of them was moral dilemma, like pose or put your players in a situation that is very morally gray. Mm. And before they make a decision, you end the game. is really cool. Yeah, it's really cool because it gives them the chance to mull it over.
Yeah.
You know, like in the moment, a player might not actually have an answer for you. They might give you some non-committal response that doesn't really create anything interesting. Mm-hmm. But if you give them the situation where, like, you know, I'm trying to think of one that I've done recently where they were asked to participate in this almost like a trial. Mm. The party was asked to participate in a trial and they had to decide on who is going to be put at, like, there were two trials happening and there were two criminals or people who needed to be tried.
Yeah.
And they were effectively the people who were going to decide, like, person A is going to see this judge with this courtroom, mm-hmm. and person B is going to go see a different courtroom with a different judge. Mm-hmm. And like, but they had a lot of information about one of these judges is crooked.
Yeah.
And he has a hidden agenda, and he's going to convict this person, innocent or not. Like, this person is going to be found guilty and they're going to be hung.
Yeah.
Like that's going to happen. So they need to make this decision of sending somebody that they've made a connection with. It was an NPC who they've grown fond of, but who's done some shady stuff. So do you send him to be tried and hung?
Yeah.
Or do you keep this connection with you, knowing that he's probably guilty of some stuff? And anyway, so that was, I set up this situation. There was a lot of role play and it was a lot of fun. And then I said, okay, before you make your decision, we're done.
Yeah.
We'll find out what you do next time. They ended up keeping him. They ended up keeping him alive, which of course they did. But anyway, it was fun to see them kind of think it through. And one of my players even texted me, you know, out of game, being like, "Oh, I really hope we can keep him. He's super cool, and I like the character, and et cetera, et cetera." So
I really like that. I think it. I want to kind of pick into it a little bit too, where one of the things that I find with these moments, and the thing that I really like about doing this sort of action, is that we ourselves are not perfect people. And when we play these games, we try to play like paragons of the type that we're trying to emulate. So if, you know, Shade always likes to say like the big damn heroes and that kind of stuff, like, you know, these people who know what to do, they are driven by personal convictions. Most people are not as extreme or are as self-assured as most heroes that we play in our games. And so letting them out of game be able to talk it over, mull it through, try to figure out what it is that they actually want to do. Because also, like, playing a character in an improvisational way, which is what role play is, it sometimes you can make a decision in the moment and then be like, that didn't fit the character. Like, I just panicked, whatever it was. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I like the idea of giving them space. But what I want to ask you is, have you ever done that and found that the next time they come back that they're like, wait, where were we again? You know, the whole thing about memory and like the space between sessions, and people can kind of lose the details. Do you ever worry about that when using this type of cliffhanger?
Yeah. So I would worry about it if there was going to be like a hiatus or something.
Sure.
Definitely. I'm privileged in that my party, my gaming table right now is meeting roughly three times every 4 weeks. Mm. We're supposed to be playing weekly.
Yeah.
But, you know, a game gets canceled because of life. So because of the frequency, I haven't run into that problem.
Yeah.
Like, players remember, they are excited to come back. And like, in this moment, like in this example, they sat down at the table and there was no small talk before the game. Like, they wanted to
let's do this.
Yeah, let's make this happen. So I know that's maybe not a great answer, but I think it's a consideration, definitely. Like, you don't want to do this before, like, you take the summer off because you know that two of the people in your table, you know, travel or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, if you're going to take a break, I would avoid this kind of thing. But at the same time, there's ways to do it, I think, without really having too much nuance.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, you could pose a moral dilemma that has less consequences than it might appear. I'm trying to think of one off the top of my head. Let's say a character meets a town guard. They're in the city. They meet a town guard, and the town guard says, "Hey, I got to take a break. Here's my keys. You watch the prisoners."
Yeah.
And you let them, you know, you back off. Is that a moral dilemma? I'm not sure, but it's still this decision that the players need to, like, oh, am I responsible for this? Like, do I really want to? Or that's maybe a bad example. Let's say there's someone that they see sneak out of the guard's, like, barracks. Like,
yeah,
there's a burglar leaving with goods. Maybe they're picking a lock. And then you end the episode with the burglar being like, shh,
yeah,
don't say anything. And then you end the game. So it can be like these types of situations that I think stick in your memory without too much context.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. What do you think, Nick?
Oh, it's tough because, like, I think that there are two ways to approach it. One being, like, if you have a stable group that's going to meet frequently enough and the group does not have any sort of, like, brain chemistry stuff that hampers memory, which my group, like most of us, including myself, have ADHD and just can't remember shit at any point of time. So sometimes I'll be like, I'll have set up something and then I'll hit them with it. And then in the moment they're like, oh my God. And then the next time they come back, they're like, where were we? What were we doing? And it's like, no. But I also think that if you as a GM calibrate why you're doing it, if you're trying to do it so that it's like next time on and they get really excited to do something offline, then I think that mixed success, really judge your group, try to figure how invested they are in that sort of thing. And if they are that kind of player, then go for it. That's going to be awesome. But if you're doing it because it's like, this is a great way to end a session. Like, look at all of them being like, I'm so excited. And it's like, in the moment, this is just a good storytelling thing. Then do it all the time. You know what I mean? Yeah. I feel like it is sort of a thing where if you as a GM are not going to put a ton of stakes on whether they remember the details or whatever the next time, or if you're trying to elicit a specific reaction that you're going to get the next time you start playing, and that is your kind of metric for success, I'd be like, just in general, don't do that, because you're going to be disappointed most of the time. Because I think that, you know, life is busy. People think about different things. Like, I remember when I started one of my longer campaigns, I made a wiki for it, and I was like, constantly updating this wiki with the expectation that other people would be updating their character's wiki and like looking at all of the other things to stay fresh, or like, oh, what happened? Let me go like read the summary, or let me go check into this character's sort of bio about the stuff we know. Nobody ever fucking looked at that thing except for me. Like, that was just,
you were the only one in there.
So I think that you just have to judge your motivations on some of this too. Like, I hate the look in a GM's eye when they expect a certain reaction and then everyone just isn't sort of able to give it just because they don't remember or they're not interested or whatever it is.
People listening know their table better than us. So take it for what it's worth. I'll say one other thing about this actually that I think is super important, and we should have maybe said it at the beginning, is that while a cliffhanger can be super satisfying, you also don't want to steal from your table the only satisfying plot reveal that might have happened in the game, right? Like, if you're building up, and then there's never a pressure release.
Yeah.
And the only way you do that is with these like cliffhangers, that might be a bad thing. Like, people might not be super excited about it. They might even be able to like telegraph what's happening. So you don't want to elicit this kind of expectation every single time.
Yeah.
So make sure there's moments where you still release the tension or create a cool moment. One such moment like this happened to me not too long ago when we were playing. There was a combat scenario where the players encountered a hag in the combat scenario. And it was the first time they had run into a hag. And just the way that the dice rolled that night, the players were getting decimated by the creatures. Like, the hag was destroying them. And one of the only frontliners that the party had at the time got downed. She was unconscious on the ground. And I'm like, oh no, like I can smell a TPK coming.
Yeah.
I'm going to give them an out. I know that hags make cool deals. Like, that's what hags are known to do. I didn't have a deal already figured out, but I basically had the hag approach one of the other characters that was like alive and in the dungeon with them and tell them, like, I'm going to offer you a bargain. Mm-hmm. I'm going to offer you a deal, and I'm going to call off all my minions, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. You have to agree to my terms before
you know what they are.
Before you know what the terms are. That's what I'm setting up on the table for you. And there was a real part of me that's like, this is a great spot to end the night. Like, let's end right here because it's such a cool decision. But the whole night had been this fight. So I felt like I was robbing my table. If I were to end the night here, I would be robbing my table of a cool kind of role play decision that I felt wrong.
Yeah.
So in that circumstance, I actually gave them the floor to think about what they wanted to do. I said, I'm going to go. I need a beer. I need to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. And then when I'm back, you're going to give me a decision and we're going to keep playing.
Yeah.
I went to get my beer and then I looked up cool hag deals on my phone and then I came back.
Yeah. One thing that I love about that too, is just like the, so Franco, Rio and I specifically disagree on this, I think, but I always am like, I want to include all of the different types of gameplay that people like to do within a session so that there's not just combat, so that there's not just role playing, so that there's not just puzzles, whatever it is. And I like the idea that like you are thinking of it more as in like robbing the players of making like a hitting a checkpoint almost, if you're thinking of it in like video game terms, is like the checkpoint isn't right before you decide what the deal is. It's right after.
totally.
And so I'm kind of interested that in this situation, how long did you play after and how did you bring that to a close that session? Did you just have them either accept or not accept the deal? And then it was like, all right, guys, great job, we'll see you next week. Or was it like, let's keep playing, like let's continue on in the story?
Yeah, we did wrap up a bit. So they made the decision about whether or not they were going to accept the deal, and they did. They accepted the deal. Mm-hmm. And then we played on for another 30 minutes or so. So the hag said like, okay, let's shake on it. And she did like some weird ritual, shook hands. And in that time when I was taking my quote unquote break, I found a cool deal, which was to have the hag be able to see through the player's eyes at any moment that she wants to.
Yeah.
So I kind of described this scenario where the player started to feel sand in their eyes, but there wasn't any, and he like rubbed his eyes and he couldn't take it out. And then the hag kind of said something cryptic. I forget exactly what I said, but she was like, when the sand goes away, you'll know that I saw what you see through your eyes. Something like this. And then she disappeared in a puff of smoke. So I had her disappear, let the players kind of like figure out, like they revived the person on the ground. They talked to one another. The character had this role play moment where he was talking about like, I just made a deal. Like what exactly is going on in my eyes? If they feel weird. And they tried to like decode what the hag had said to them. And then I managed to still end it on a cliffhanger by having a building off in the distance, kind of like fire start to erupt from the building and like it starts to break. So they're like, oh my God, what's going on there? And then we ended the night.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm not sure if that answers your question totally, Nick, but I didn't want to end it right away. I gave them some time to kind of decompress before lifting the stakes up again and then ending the night.
Yeah, this is a really great thing about sort of like the, it, not even like pacing, but sort of like you said, the tension meter. And I think I want to dive into that just after this break.
Hey everyone, it's me, Nick, from the Tabletop Podcast. When I'm not hosting, I'm thinking about ways to create a better podcast for you guys, and I think I landed on something pretty fun. In fact, if you go to our Patreon at patreon.com/tabletopped and join for as little as $1 a month, you can get access to a new episode a month that we're going to start putting out. In fact, we're going to be calling this one Wild Magic, I think, in that we're going to talk about anything and everything that interests us, not just TTRPGs, though there will be a lot of that. It is truly unhinged, and if you are a fan of the podcast and all of the hosts, you're definitely going to want to be on it. We're thinking of dropping these at the end of each month, so join our Patreon today. That is patreon.com/tabletopped. Oh, and there's going to be so much more coming out in the new year there, so don't miss it. Sign up today.
Welcome back, everyone, to Tabletop. We are speaking with Matt from Roleplay Chat, a wonderful kind of sister podcast to Tabletop. If you like ours, you'll definitely like his. Okay, Matt, so right before the break, we were kind of talking about tension and building and releasing it as a GM. And I kind of want to dive into this a little bit because you were talking about giving your characters a moment and then kept playing post a thing where you could have ended it on a high tension cliffhanger. And then at the end, you were sort of like, and then I had them see sort of this other thing that was happening to set up the next session. And that is also an anticipatory cliffhanger. So how did you make the decision between those two things? What, like, you said you didn't want to rob them of this moment, but how did you sort of like make that decision? And what was the thing that made you make, you know, go one way rather than the other?
Yeah. Well, I think it's really good that we're talking about pacing, Nick, because I don't think we can talk about cliffhangers without it. And I tend to follow a rule of thumb where I like to try as best I can to make my, to make my games follow a reverse bell curve pace, where we start the night high. Somewhere along the way, there should be some kind of, I don't want to call it downtime, because that's a loaded term that can be used for lots of stuff, but you know, the tension and drama should come down. There should be a moment of reprieve before the drama or tension starts to crank back up. Now, of course, this is not something that I'm going to force every time, but basically what had happened in this game was they started the game in a fight. Like, they arrived in the cemetery, there was skeletons and ghouls, and they were chasing somebody through the cemetery. To me, that felt like it was already pretty high as far as danger and tension goes. And the fight kind of, you know, went on as fights do sometimes when there's a lot of moving pieces. And 2 hours in, I'm like, okay, here comes the hag. It's 2.5 hours. Usually I like to keep my games short because we play very frequently in this particular campaign. So like you said, I had this decision point where do I end it on a high without ever having really brought it down? And I decided not to. I figured, you know what, we need to give the players a moment to relax, to think of something outside of just this fight. And then the kind of the rest followed. So that was kind of where I sat with it. I don't know if that makes
sense. Yeah, no, it totally does. It's there's actually a really great thing Stephen Sondheim once said about when you're writing a musical or developing something in this sort of way, that one of the biggest things that you might need at the end when you have kind of packed all of your ideas into something is silence. You need to have the silence because then it makes the sound feel better. They do this in movies all the time too. Like if you think of the second of the new, the Revenge of the Jedi, the new trilogy, and the second, like the middle movie that everybody hates. I think it's great, but whatever. when you have that moment where the like super Star Destroyer or whatever gets cut in half by the people jumping like at light speed into it, they cut all of the sound, because what they did there is just make a really visceral change. You know what I mean? And I think that I really like the idea that if you start a session in a certain mode, that you should at least try to go through two more modes before you end your session.
Yeah.
Whether that's down and then back up, or whether that's higher and then down, or whatever it is. I really like that sort of idea, like a way to frame it. And this is actually kind of leads into my next question about this. You were talking about how you were trying to get into a more improvisational sort of way of like no prep or low prep sessions, and, you know, telling stories that way. With cliffhangers, a lot of times, a lot of people think that they need to be a hint of like some big thing in the overarching story. They need to be really well thought out. They need to do all this. How do you implement something that's like an anticipation builder when, if you are kind of improvising a session, you might not know when the session was going to end? You don't know where the party is going to get to or even go in some cases. How do you give, like, what would you give as advice to folks who are trying to get into, you know, using these as a way to kind of spice up the endings of their sessions, but don't really have a way that they know to definitely get to a specific place, you know what I mean, to end?
Yeah, that's really good. That's a really good question, Nick. So I'll tell you, there's maybe two answers to this. I'll tell everybody listening the way I've been doing it. But I realize that this might not be a very fulfilling answer. So I'll also say how I would have done it with a little bit more preparation involved. So in the current context, these cliffhangers that I'm coming up with, I am quite literally coming up with them on the spot. Mm. Like I don't even know. When I made that moment of like, oh, the building's on fire, I didn't know why. I didn't know who had done it. And it's kind of fun in a way, because it creates this easy to-do list. Before I play my next game, I need to figure out why the building is on fire.
Yeah.
Who put the building on fire? And I've got enough factions at play that I've already figured out and fleshed out that I can slot one in.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like you're giving yourself a writing prompt.
pretty much exactly that. You know, I just create a situation that if I were a player, I would want to engage in. And that's my cliffhanger, mm-hmm. quote unquote cliffhanger.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an NPC that the players love now finds themselves in mortal peril, and I have to figure out if they get out of it or not later.
Yeah.
Of course, in the moments where there's like an interesting plot twist, that's the kind of stuff that I think would require a little bit more forethought. But it's surprisingly easy. And I think as long as you trust yourself, like believe in yourself as a game master, that you're going to be able to come up with something interesting to justify the moment of tension and drama that you've generated. And I believe in every one of you. You can do it.
Yeah, no, this is really great. So within the tabletop group, there is some folks who are like, zero story. Like we do not make story as GMs. The players make stories, and we also like collaborate with them to tell them. And like, but there is no one person who is building the story. And instead, I don't know if I 100% agree with that, because in my case, I've always sort of built like general arcs to like push people along.
Yeah.
I might not create like individual moments throughout every session or whatever, but who can? That's crazy. but we've kind of settled on the idea of like clocks, of the idea that if the players don't intercede, that there is something that's going to happen, or like people are working on something. And if the players don't stop them or stumble across them or interrupt them in some way, then this is just going to happen. And it doesn't matter if the players do or not. It's their choice to do whatever. But then you as a game master can say, I actually kind of know what is happening in the world around you. Like you were saying with your factions that you fleshed out, mm-hmm. you know who those groups are and what they want and what they're trying to do probably at any general given moment in a story. And you're able to just sort of like you said, make a decision and then slot these things in. So I would also recommend like just having a general idea. If you are somebody who's improvising a general plot and you have to end a session and you're in a weird place where you didn't think you were, or you're just like, I have no idea what next session will be, like just take a general idea from what you were saying, Matt, of like, what is happening in the world? I'm just going to pick something and I'm going to do it, and do it when you take a quick bio break before the end of the session or whatever.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly it. And yeah, to add to that, I think clocks are a great way to do it. There's a couple of games that are powered by the apocalypse that have these things called fronts.
Okay.
Which I don't know if we had the chance to talk about this in our other conversation, Nick, but basically a front is a list of like, I think it's five steps. It's like the five-step plan for your bad.
Mm.
Like what they want to do and the five steps that they're going to do to get to that.
Yeah.
If they go completely uninterrupted by the party.
Yep.
So having something like that sort of figured out for the two or three villainous factions that are, you know, confronting the party. If you have something like that figured out, whether it be in a clock format or even just like a checklist of some sort, you should kind of have that figured out if you want to.
Mm-hmm.
And each of those to-do list things could be a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
Like it could be like, oh, you see a cultist dressed in a robe handing out pamphlets to their next like annual meeting or something. Even if it's like the beginning of something, that's still a moment that the players can be like, oh my God, like I need to go interact with this. And then you end the game.
Yeah.
So you can be at the beginning of that, or you can be at the very end where, you know, the town square is filled with blood and there's the pentagram on the ground and the demon is coming, like the hand of the demon is coming out. And that's where you end the game to start up next time. Like, that'd be cruel, but you could do that.
Yeah, I definitely
using fronts.
Yeah, absolutely. The clocks that I was talking about are basically like that must be a different Powered by the Apocalypse that just has slightly different terminology, but that's exactly what I usually use as well. I just think that like it doesn't even have to be faction oriented too. Like if you're somebody who's like, I don't even have an idea of who is in this city, then just be like. Like if you want a low prep thing you can do is just pick something and create one of these fronts or these clocks to have on it. Like that's just happening in the city in the background. So that if anything, like if you just hit a moment where the players don't have something to do, just fall back on the front or the clock or whatever and say like, oh
yeah,
I decided earlier that there's like an earthquake that's going to hit this town if in case like the magic ley lines under the city are disrupted, and so like unless the players go and stabilize them, this is the checklist of what's going to happen, the final one being the ground opening up and the town falling into the earth, you know.
That's perfect.
Yeah, exactly. So you can even make it just like abstract it out from people or things or like your overall story. If you have something like that too, you can make it a little bit more environmental.
Yeah And I mean, you talking about your one of your co-hosts who doesn't believe that the game master ever tells any of the stories. A very interesting opinion. I disagree with it.
Yeah, you got it.
Because of the role that we have at the table.
Matt,
but
I'm telling you, you and Franco got to sit down. You got to sit down.
Yeah, one of these days.
It's just one like, yeah, basically it's just like, I guess in his mind, it's like, who am I to like force this story down a group's throat when it's sort of like a collaborative experience and we're finding out what's happening together? I build the sandbox and then they tell the story and I facilitate that and I help them. Like I add my flair on it.
Yeah. That's totally okay. Yeah. Like if that's the way he wants to run.
Yeah, no, it's just so different. Like even for me, like
it's very different.
Yeah. Even for me, I'm like, but I have something that I'm trying to say.
But what I would say in that context, if you're somebody who's listening who's like that, I think one way that you could still implement interesting cliffhangers is to look to your players. You look to the things that your players value, the things that your players and their characters, like what is the character's moral compass like? Or what is something that you know that a character has this specific weakness, and if you baited them with it, it might trigger them to do something fascinating or interesting. You could create, if you wanted to prepare moments that could create cliffhangers, you could think of each of the players in your table and their characters and come up with one or two situations that would entice them to interact with it. And then from there, you kind of have a little backup list of potential cliffhangers. You know, I'm trying to think back to a player that I played with a long time ago who had this character who was a dwarven slayer. And in the Warhammer universe, slayers are these like military focused, very reckless, live for glory, die for glory, you know, be part of the history books kind of mentality.
Even more than that, because I just recently learned about slayers. It's like,
oh cool,
you have been dishonored in the only way you can regain your honor, which is like you said, like a core part of their like ideology is by dying fighting a monster in combat. So they're just keep going for the bigger and bigger monsters until something can kill them.
So you know, a character like this is just ripe for situations where you put them in a situation where, there's a big bad monster, or the night's about to end, and then all the little monsters that were running around get gobbled up by an even bigger monster, and then you end the night, and then you can see the fire in the slayer's eyes, like, I gotta go kill that monster. Like, that's my destiny. So, I mean, are we writing the story or the players, or are we manipulating the story to be what the players want to see? It's you know, that could be a debate that we could sit here all night talking about, but that's another way to make a cliffhanger less about the plot of the factions going on and more about the characters, I think there's a way to do it. Definitely.
Absolutely. I think that that is a really great way to do it, of like taking a known habit by a player or a known character trait of a character, and then just sort of like pressing a button that activates one of those things. You can usually rely on people to kind of act in a certain way unless they're like completely disengaged. So I think that that's a really good piece of advice. As we kind of wind down here, I want to ask you, what is your favorite cliffhanger that you've either ever done or as a player ever experienced? Like, what in your mind is like the Everest of cliffhangers that you've come to?
Yeah. Well, this is a hard question to answer, but there's one that comes to mind right away that I really, really appreciated. This was a long time ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And I was a player in this scenario where I was, it's again in this Warhammer fantasy roleplay game that's been going on for a really long time now, mm-hmm. where I'm playing a wizard, an Azure wizard. So we're like astromancers, can see the future. Mm-hmm. And I had a mission, self-imposed, where I wanted to climb up to the top of a mountain to go inside of a lightning storm to make a staff for myself, mm-hmm. because that is like where my kind of magic like resides.
Yeah.
And anyway, we spent a couple of games, me and the party, finding our way up to the top of this mountain. And when we get to the top of the mountain, there's this gigantic dragon that's sitting up there and it's spewing lightning out of its mouth. And I'm like, oh my God, we got to take this thing down. Like, this is going to be so cool. We start fighting the dragon. And then when we get our first attack connects to the dragon, we realize that it's actually an illusion, that there is a group of gnomes at the top of this mountain using like illusion magic to trick us into thinking that there is this dragon there. So we have this moment where we're like, we expected one thing and then we got another.
Yeah.
And then before the end of the night, the gnomes kind of like dissipate and there's like this moment of pause. And then a boulder like cracks open and there's a Shaggoth, which is like this giant beast of a, like almost like a centaur,
yeah.
made of rock, just shows up. And we're like, okay, back to 100 miles an hour. Like, we're fighting a giant monster. And then the night ended.
Yeah.
So there was this roller coaster of emotion that I think is going to live with me for a really long time. And I think the magic of that roller coaster was really playing with our expectation.
Yeah.
You know, we went to the top of the mountain expecting a big monster. We got the big monster, but it just wasn't how we thought we were going to get it, you know?
Yeah, I love that idea of just like, it's sort of like the head fake of like, oh, gotcha. Nope, just kidding. Yeah, you were right all along. So great.
Yeah, totally.
Matt,
how about yourself, Nick?
Is there it actually probably happened really recently. And also going back to the no brain good, bad memory. But recently we were in this Waterdeep campaign. And we found this big tunnel under the ground. And there's like some weird stuff that were going on around like these oozes and maybe some vampires like infiltrating the city. And so we were like going out to this vampire's like essentially like house party to be like, that's where the bad stuff's happening. But then we find like this NPC character like shows up and is like, oh, like, it's so weird like to see you guys here. So like when we're chatting with her and then we leave and she's like, yeah, everyone's been so weird lately. Like, I just have been like not so hungry or whatever. I just feel kind of sick. I'm going to go home. So we go down into this thing, find this huge hole like in the basement that's like obviously a cavern that goes somewhere, and I'm like so excited. I'm like, yes, let's go. And then we're walking and I was like, because my character is a detective, and I was like, fuck, she is a vampire. Like, I just like, I realized this in the moment, and my character is just like basically like looks at everyone's like, sorry guys, turns around, like runs away. And we go back out because some of our friends stayed out there with her and had this huge thing where she was like, no, I'm not, like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm in the sun right now. This is like, you guys are crazy. Like, and she's sort of like a love interest of another character, and the other character's like, what are you doing, Marks? Like, you're being a dickhead. And then she's like, yeah, this is just so frustrating. I need something to cool my nerves. And she takes out a bottle of wine, and I was like, obviously it's the wine. Like, and then we like have this thing where we're like about to test her, like we're about to find out, and then it was like, that's the end of the session, we're gonna find out the next session. Nice. And I was like, ah, because I was like screaming at everybody on the on our Discord or whatever. But it was a blast. I really love that too, of like,
that's cool,
like you said, it's all about that bell curve of tension of ending, either ramping up, like instead of ending on your way down and then you have to do all the effort of building back up the next session, just do yourself a little favor and get a little bit of momentum going back up the other way, and then you can end on that so much easier.
Definitely, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Matt, before
was she a vampire?
She was a vampire. I was so okay, I was okay. Fucking right. She was a Damphir, though. She was a Damphir, and it was also this thing where it's like she didn't have all the weaknesses of vampires or like some of the traits, because one of the vampires is like a scientist that I think is trying to essentially infect all of Waterdeep to become these sort of like Damphir thralls, but they wouldn't even know it, because it's basically making a willing population that just has one of those like sleeper agent switches where you could like rule over them. It was very cool. It was a very cool idea.
Neat. Very neat.
Okay. So Matt, Roleplay Chat's coming back. When is it coming back? Yeah. What should we expect from season 5? Where can people find you?
Yeah. Thanks, Nick. Yeah. So Roleplay Chat is coming back. Season 5 is starting up in March 2024, so people can go look for Role Play Chat. That's ROLE space play chat on any wherever you're listening to this. I'm there. I guarantee I'm there too. So go subscribe to the show if you're not already, or go check out some of the back catalog if you're listening to this before season 5 starts. Their chats exactly like this. Me and other creators. I've had some really cool folks join me. The season opener for season 5 is with Katiosaurus, who's a known member of the TTRPG space, who's a big advocate for people with neurodivergencies and ADHD. And we talk about exactly this, you know, running games for people who have ADHD, or if you have ADHD, if there are certain struggles that you struggle with, how could you maybe get over that hump? And or if you're trying to become a game master and you don't know if you have it in you, the answer is you do. And Katie gives some really cool advice and recommendations. So anyway, that's a really cool episode to look forward to. And and on socials, role_play_chat. I'm mostly on Threads these days. I'm having a good time there, but still on X, still on Blue Sky, still on Mastodon, all that. All
still on all of these things that take our time. Well, Matt, as always, it's been a huge pleasure. I'm so excited. You are actually the first interview of Tabletop's 3rd year. So thank you so much for being a friend of the pod, and we'll see you again soon.
My pleasure. Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me, Nick. And everybody listening should look forward to Nick joining me in that 5th season of Roleplay Chat. And come listen to him talk over there, too.
Absolutely. Everybody, if you like Tabletop and what you just heard, you can get more of it. Just subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. We release an episode every Monday, and we will see you next week. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.